Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Bard's Poetry Revolution. This is a question and answer session with publishers of Local Gems Press. I'm James P. Wagner, and we got Nick here. Hey, Nick.
Hey, everybody. Hey, James. How you doing?
Hey, not bad. So we've had a bunch of people send in questions for the publishers, and that's what we're going to be answering this time. It's going to be relatively straightforward because we're always getting questions from people about, you know, all sorts of publishing topics. You know, get the books, etc. And so I'm going to just pull some up here and we're going to answer a few. So while I bring one up, Nick, tell that joke you know.
Well, I don't know many jokes, but I will say it has been really exciting, all the new things that have sort of been coming out of this terrible situation. I was just at in a virtual poetry reading over a Zoom call yesterday. I had my own Nova Bards workshop over a similar call. And yesterday's reading was actually from a local Virginia group, but we had people as far away as, well, Long Island join in for the reading. So aside from our virtual readings and all the seminars that we've been doing, there's just so much stuff that people have been coming up with, and it's really awesome. And I think a lot of the interactions we've had with people, the questions and the comments, the things they've sent us, and the audio recordings have been my favorite part of this. And just getting to interact with people on a greater scale than I normally do. Like,
yeah,
normally with the people on Long Island, for example, I see them a couple of times a year in events. But it almost feels like I've been seeing them more often because we've been doing these things regularly.
Yeah, I know. In some ways, it seems almost like we've had more connection through distance, ironically. Okay, so here's a question that we had written in. They say, what are some specifics you look for in a query letter? They don't specify whether they're talking about a query letter for a full poetry manuscript or if they're just talking about individual poems or whatnot. But, you know, and it's a good question because there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of conflicting information when it comes to, you know, what's good in publishing practices. I mean, you know, when it comes to a query letter for just, say, individual poems, you know, you don't really need, like, any kind of a big formal letter, usually just a paragraph or a couple of sentences in there. In fact, sometimes you don't even really need to put anything except, you know, hey, I'm so-and-so, here's the poems. But for an entire book, you know, that's a different story, and that also varies depending on if you're talking about poetry or fiction or nonfiction.
Right, definitely. And one of the reasons for a lot of that conflicting information is this is somewhat a matter of personal preference between the publishers. I know, in my opinion, when we're talking about an individual piece in an anthology, some things I like to look for is I'm not really looking for a writer's resume because I want the poetry to speak for itself. So I tend to almost be turned off by people who give me their long list of impressive credentials. But something that's a little bit more personal. I like it when a letter is addressed to me, not dear editor or to whom it may concern, because it shows that you've taken the time to do your homework and you know who's behind this project. That is, again, a personal preference. Some places see that as too informal.
Yeah, which is really like a big thing when it comes to all this, because the industry standards aren't really standard anymore. You know, like, depending on the publisher, you know, size and whatnot, or, you know, how they do things, they could want a lot more or a lot less, you know, and they probably should have that, you know, on, you know, somewhere on a website, you know, if you know, you're going to go there to look for that information. But, you know, if we're talking poetry books right now, if you're going to be submitting a full manuscript to a publisher, you know, first of all, assuming that they're currently accepting submissions for full-length manuscripts, but in a cover letter for that, you probably want to have some information about yourself. If it's a full-length book, that's a little bit of a time to give more of those professional qualifications about I've been published in, you know, so-and-so, 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 or I've had these other books. You want to maybe put in a little bit about why you think your book would be a good match for this publisher in particular, because that does two things. One, it shows the publishers that you've actually looked into them and that you've done your research, you know, in terms of, like, figuring out what the type of things that they do publish. And it also gives them, you know, it answers one of the questions that they're going to be answering, which, you know, are asking is, you know, why do I want to publish this book? Because, you know, a publishing company, when they partner with an author, it's a partnership. And, you know, they got to get some, you know, there's something that they have to actually see a value in wanting to publish your book. So that helps with that. You could also put something in there about how, you know, further references, you know, could be furnished upon request if they do want more information. You know, and depending on the guidelines of the publisher, you also could include a sample of your work, you know, or the full manuscript, depending on what they want. And, you know, so that's for poetry. Fiction and nonfiction are a little bit different, but I'll go into that a little bit, too. I mean, fiction, you know, some of the same rules, you know, query letter for poetry, you put in about yourself, publishing credits, et cetera. But with nonfiction, some, you know, they actually, in a way, they actually deal with something called a book proposal, where you don't actually have to have the nonfiction book written in advance, whereas instead you would write down a proposal of the book you have in mind, you know, what target demographic it would reach, why this would be good, and then if they actually like the idea, then they kind of commission you to write it. So that's a little bit opposite of, you know, how it goes with poetry and fiction. But that's not always the case. Sometimes you could have a complete nonfiction book and you're just looking for a publisher, but it's one of the fields you don't necessarily have to have as much up front. But, yeah, for query letter, you know, obviously info about you, why this would be a good match, you know, your previous history. So those are all things that a publisher is going to look at. And also, you want it to not be either too short or too long, because either one of those, like if it's just like a couple of sentences, like, oh, I did, you know, here's my, you know, the wonderful book I'm doing out. I thought you guys might like it. Bye. You know, that's probably too informal and doesn't really give them a sense of why they're going to take the effort to read it. But if you send them like a 15-page letter, then they're also going to be like, okay, well, I'm not, you know, unless you really, really hook them early on somehow, which, you know, I've never seen a letter that long that I've really been hooked to read all the way through myself personally. So.
Yeah, it's somewhere between an elevator speech and a longer sales pitch, what you want. You want to consider the principles of business writing. Try to cut out extra fluff, any extra details you might not need, because your whole goal is to introduce your book and hopefully persuade them to want to take it. So anything that's not really working towards that end, outside of like friendly salutations and closing and things like that, you want to edit that out.
Yeah, and one other thing.
It kind of also goes with.
Oh, go ahead.
It goes without saying that especially with fiction and nonfiction, though it's also true for poetry, it's useful to give them an idea of sort of what the content of the book is about, and avoid general phrases or things that are sort of, what's the word I'm looking for, value judgments. Things like, you might want to publish this book because it's too good not to publish, or this is my masterwork, or this is a Nobel Prize winning. All of those things are things that I've heard from people. Let the work speak for itself.
My mom really likes this book, you know, or stuff like that. Like, you know.
Surprisingly, I haven't heard that one.
Yeah, well, I've heard similar things, and it's like, unless your mother is an editor at, like, Doubleday or Penguin, you know, not really a, you know, that isn't really a credential. But, you know, one other thing that you should definitely put in the query letter is if the publisher has had, you know, any kind of other projects or things that you may have been a part of in the past, you know, doesn't hurt to put in there, you know, hey, I was published in, you know, this anthology or this collection or something, you know, either an individual poem or a short story if it's fiction or something like that, you know, and also, you know, it kind of, you know, publishers like to work with people that they're, you know, they're familiar with or who, you know, come recommended by people they are familiar with. You know, pretty much everything is reputation and relationship. So anything you could do to establish a good one like that or show them that you already have a good relationship with them, you know, that could definitely be helpful and go a long way in them actually giving it, you know, a more thorough consideration.
Yeah.
So, all right, so this next question I have here. I have an idea for cover art. It's a painting by Rene Magritte. How do I get permission to use that art? Well, that's a complicated question, but also a good one that should be answered, because that is one of the number one things that a lot of, you know, authors, when they get to the book stage, start to really consider is, you know, oh, I have to think of cover art or whatever. And, you know, I mean, well, first of all, saying that, you know, most publishers should have some kind of a, you know, service or offer some kind of help in terms of designing the cover art, or if they don't do it themselves, they should be able to recommend the service to get cover art. But if you're looking for, say, an already famous painting to be the cover art, that's one area you have to be careful with, because there is the thing called the public domain. And if that artwork is in the public domain, you could just use it without needing any permission whatsoever. You don't have to pay anybody any royalties or anything like that. If the painting or piece of artwork or anything is not in the public domain and somebody owns, you know, the copyright to it or the intellectual property to it, then you need permission from either that person or the estate of that person. And it becomes somewhat complicated to get that, especially if it's actually, say, a dead artist and their family still owns the permission of that, because then you have to get in contact with, you know, the estate or the, you know, whoever actually, you know, has inherited the intellectual property. And you have to get their written and signed permission to be able to do that, and they'll probably want some kind of a compensation. If it's a living artist who, you know, has the painting out there, you would have to get in contact with them or whoever represents them, and you would have to get written permission, you know, usually something signed, and you would have to furnish compensation for them in order to do that. And the level to which, you know, contacting said artists is easy varies depending on who the artist is, you know, whether how obscure they are, how well-known they are. You know, and you could have one who's really obscure, who's hard to get in touch with because nobody has any information, or somebody is really well known, will have a lot of barriers up that makes it hard to get in touch with. So, these are all things to consider when it comes to doing, you know, the artwork. But one thing you definitely never want to do is use artwork without permission.
Yeah, absolutely. And you need to be careful. There are some websites that will list things as public domain falsely. So always make sure that if you're finding something that is public domain, that you have a reputable source that is claiming that. Because especially on a lot of these stock image sites, let's say you have a stock photo that you really love and you want that to be the basis of your cover art, make sure that the site is reputable and that the license is listed properly. There are also other types of licenses. The other big one is if you have permission to use the photo to modify it. But public domain is really what you want to look for if you're looking for finding cover art yourself or commissioning an artist yourself.
And there are also plenty of, you know, free photography websites out there where, you know, the photographer, the artist will let you use the work, and all they want in return is, you know, to have a credit somewhere in the book. Well, they'll say, you know, anybody could use this for free. Just make sure that you say, you know, artwork by so-and-so. Those are pretty common, and there's a lot of good stuff out there. And, you know, doing that could also be something to consider because, you know, when you're doing that, you're also helping the photographer or the artist because you're, you know, giving, you know, their artwork or their photography more views and exposure out there, you know, and sometimes that's all that they want. I know we have the joke about the, yeah, my rent only cost me 2,600 exposures a month, but, you know, there are plenty photographers and artists who are building their portfolio, you know, and so they're happy for their stuff to be spread around as much as it possibly can. So, if you, you know, that's another type of resource for artwork to look out for.
Yeah, so, definitely. And there are also many freelance sites where you can actually go looking if you have a specific idea in mind for a piece that you want.
Yeah, definitely. You know, Fiverr, Upwork, there's a lot of, you know, like just artwork sites where you can commission somebody something. Usually you could put in like what kind of, you know, you could describe the job you're looking for, and then they'll start actually saying, you know, how much they'll charge to do it. And then you could kind of pick them based on their qualifications and, you know, some of their sample art. So there's a lot of options for getting decent cover art. You don't actually have to use a famous painting if, you know, if that becomes a problem, or getting permission's a problem. So the next question here is, how many poems does it take to publish a book, and do all the poems in the book have to reflect the title? So that's a couple of different points there. How many poems does it take to publish a book? Well, that varies greatly depending on the number of, you know, like the number of lines the poem is. For example, Gilgamesh was one poem, but it was, you know, an entire book. You know, the tradition of epic poetry could go on and on and on and on for hundreds of pages and, you know, like hundreds of thousands of lines. So you could do a book that's just one poem if you're writing an epic poem. If you're, you know, doing like, you know, 3 or 4 minute long performance, you know, piece poems that, you know, might be like, you know, 4 or 5 pages long on the page, you know, you probably could do a book of maybe only 10 of those or less if you're doing a small chapbook, because that also comes with the definition. Are you talking about a chapbook or are you talking about a full length collection? You know, and there's, you know, no set right or wrong answer in regards to that, because books come in different shapes and sizes, and also fonts come in different shapes and sizes, you know, so there's a lot of, you know, personal judgment involved in that. So, but on average, you know, on average, you know, a small chapbook, you know, depending on how you're binding it, because you could have a small fold-over chapbook or a, you know, a saddle-stitched, you know, chapbook that's only 15 pages, and it could be 3 poems. Usually a perfect bound one, though, would probably be about 30 pages or 40 pages, in which case, depending on the poems, you know, in there, if you have poems that are, say, 30 lines or less, you know, something around 1 page per poem, then you probably, you know, you want to have about 30 pages worth of poetry to do that. If you're looking for a full length, you're looking more at the 60 to 80 page range, sometimes over 100. So really it comes down to how many, you know, how big or small your poems actually are.
Yeah, so I think the short answer to this is there isn't really a set a limit to how many poems, because it depends on so many variables. I mean, I've seen poetry books that were 15 pages long. And I, you know, like you mentioned, Gilgamesh is one poem that would fit into a book all on its own. So it really depends on how long your poems are, how many poems you want in the book, and what the publisher is looking for. Some publishers only publish chapbooks. They'll only deal with shorter books of poetry. Some of them don't touch chapbooks. And a chapbook, for if you're not aware, is just a shorter book of poetry. So generally, what's the limit? You said we'd say like 30 to 40 pages.
Yeah, well, the jury is constantly debating about that. I mean, you know, some definitions say that it, you know, a chapbook is like 25 pages or less, but, you know, there are, you know, in recent years there have been more like, you know, because in the olden days, like, a chapbook was usually hastily thrown together. It was kind of something you would think more of like a leaflet or a pamphlet, you know, a little bit more sophisticated than that. But in more recent years, you've had, you know, smaller sized, like, actually very nicely published, perfect bound chapbooks that still would count as a chapbook because they're really small, but they could go up to like 30, 40 pages, you know. But when you get into like the 50-page range, by that point, it kind of becomes harder to call it a chapbook. So, you know, anything above 50 pages is pretty much definitely just in the collection range, you know, at least by almost every definition I've ever seen. But, you know, again, industry standards become non-standard when the industry is constantly fluctuating. but it's a lot of personal choice, you know, when it comes to, you know, how many poems should be in there. And in, you know, the second part of the question, do all the poems have to reflect the title? No, they don't, especially because a lot of times you have poetry collections where it's literally like, you know, like my last book was Everyday Alchemy and Other Poems. You know, it was Everyday Alchemy was the title poem, and then it was also the title of the collection. You know, so there were lots of poems in there that had nothing to do with, you know, that didn't really have to do with the title, even though they kind of all fit a theme, but it doesn't have to be. You could have, you know, any kind of a title of the book. The title of the book also doesn't have to actually be the title of any of the poems in the book. It does help for, you know, marketing purposes and just for definition to have, say, a title that kind of goes with the theme of the book or the poems all to fit, you know, what the title is, but it's not a requirement.
Right, definitely. And I think the have to is the biggest thing, because they can, but they absolutely don't need to. It is good to have a theme that sort of ties the book together, but the theme can vary greatly and can be a very loose theme. My first book had a very loose theme to it. And I actually wrote the title poem of that book after I came up with the title for the book. So I kind of did everything backwards in that respect. I have a chapbook that's been sort of on hold for several years now, actually, and it will be coming out this year. But the theme for that book is basically the kinds of things that silver symbolizes to people, and that came out of a NaPoWriMo challenge. So the poems may not seem related to at all on first glance, but that is the one thing that sort of connects them all together. So it doesn't necessarily need to reflect the title or even be an obvious theme, but it is good to have something that ties everything together so that it shows why they're in the same book together, besides the fact that you wrote them. Because one thing about writing poetry these days is you go to the store, most people don't go looking for books by specific poets they've heard of. Unless those poets are dead and considered like in the canon, like you might go looking for a book of poetry by Edgar Allan Poe, but I might not be going out to the store to look for a book of poetry by, say, Mark Rosen, because most people don't know Mark Rosen. But if they know this is a book about, growing up with autism, they might be more interested in purchasing the book.
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, that also comes down to the question of, like, in terms of, you know, are you looking forward in terms of the marketing, you know, in which case, you know, having its, you know, the definition, you know, really, you know, like, what is this book about, you know, should be reflected in the title in that case. But, you know, it also depends on what your personal, you know, goals and motivations are. If you're, if you're doing, like, say, the Gift of Poetry Project, for example, and you're just trying to have a little chapbook of your poetry to give out to family and friends around the holidays, or, you know, something along those lines where you're not necessarily interested in selling it, you know, in the traditional sense, then, you know, there's even fewer rules than there would be, you know, in the regular sense. But, you know, really when it comes to poetry, these are all guidelines. You know, there's no hard and fast rules, because every book of poetry is an art form, you know. So because it's an art form, there's no right or wrong answer. There's only recommendeds or, you know, stuff that's good ideas or bad ideas. Is pretty much what it comes down to, and personal preference is a lot. I know the whole, like, how many poems or how many pages is a question we get a lot when we go around and do gigs at libraries and colleges and things like that, and I always feel like, well, we're answering it, but we're not really answering it, because there is no hard or set answer, but, you know, that's as good an answer as we can give you in that regard.
Yeah, I know it could seem a little bit frustrating, but part of it is because you have that freedom to make it whatever it needs to be.
Yeah, exactly. So yay for freedom. So I think that's going to do it for this short little episode of publishing Q&As. We are taking more questions, so feel free to send them in. There is a form actually on BardCon Virtual for those who are listening who are on the Local Gems email list. We will be sending out an email with, you know, the form to send in more questions, or you could send in, you know, an email directly to localgemspoetrypress@gmail.com if you want to do it that way. Or even ask it on the Local Gems Press page on Facebook. You know, pretty much there's lots of ways to contact us, so if you have questions, just send them in, and we're going to do some more of these. So thank you for listening. I'm James P. Wagner.
And I'm Nick Hale.
And
thanks for listening, everybody. Thank you for your questions. Oh,
yep.
Go ahead.
This has been Bard's Poetry Revolution. Yes, I got to drop the tagline, don't you know?
Good night.
You know? It's all about branding, so good night, everybody.